You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
A podcast you are listening to probably on a device. No, definitely on a device.
Maybe they're just like reading a transcript.
We would have to put out transcripts for that to be...
Maybe someone's doing it. We don't know.
God, that would be great.
Do you want to put out... Hey, fans, hey, put out a transcript.
Put out a transcript for us. I would love to be accessible.
I'd love to read me. Today we're going to be talking about the second serial of the 26th and final season of Doctor Who, Ghostlight, which consists of three episodes that aired from October 4th, 1989 to October 18th, 1989.
True facts!
Just missing Halloween. They should have pushed it just a little bit later, if you ask me.
Oh, because of the ghosts.
The ghost, yeah. And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden.
You can check him out at mattgolden.xyz. And speaking of, hey.
Hey, hi.
You're here.
I'm looking at you, but now I'm also looking at you because of the magic of video.
Ooh.
And audio, I guess. People listen to podcasts, too.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah.
Generally, that's
on devices.
On devices. Like one of those comically large horns that you hold up to your ear.
I would buy one of those. A Bluetooth speaker.
The ear horn?
Yeah.
If you can't tell, Matt's in the studio with us.
Studio. We're both sitting on our couch.
Welcome to another smaller studio.
It's got a TV and a couple of cats. And a bunch of shoes, like all studios have.
I'm wearing three of them right now.
Shoes or cats?
Yes.
So, yeah, I feel like we haven't done a in-person podcast in a while.
In a minute.
Maybe since
Matt. We're always in person.
We're always in person. Not always. One time you weren't.
Oh, the time you were at Christine's?
Yeah.
That's true.
Christine was the guest, but you were kind of the guest of that one.
Yes.
Speaking of, recently we went and saw Ray and Christine, previous guests, for my birthday. Just want to put that out there. It was a fun time in LA.
Just a little bit of podcast lore for you.
Yeah.
Happy belated birthday.
Thank you. You weren't there. Why weren't you there?
I wasn't there.
Why didn't you come to LA with us?
Because I secretly hate you.
Oh.
Oh, I knew it.
Yeah.
Is it that secret?
It can be. It depends on how much you drink.
I didn't drink anything that weekend. It's a bummer. It's my birthday.
You didn't?
You didn't?
No.
Wow.
Didn't drink anything.
No, I guess I didn't either.
Because it was is legal, I did do a weed.
Thank you for prefacing it.
Yes.
Yeah, I did a singular weed. It was in gummy form.
Hello, shopkeep. I would like one of your finest weed.
It's the only time I've ever done it. It was different. I was focusing very hard on, we were playing a card game, and the cards looked very weird to me. They looked like clickable objects in a video game. They were shiny and separate from everything else. That was my experience. So how you been, Matt?
I've been good. I actually am doing this podcast remotely because apparently I am dissociating right now. Because I can't remember anything that has happened.
Ever?
Ever?
Ever. I even drove by your house.
You did.
It's fine. None of it's good.
That's true.
You don't have to remember it.
Yeah, when I checked out, things were bad, and I guess it's comforting to know that now that I'm back, things are still bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't me that was the bad.
If it helps, I know how much you love the color blue.
And our shutters are blue.
So they're actually TARDIS blue. They're TARDIS blue. Hone in on that, and that will guide you to our home.
It's our matte beacon.
Also, we do have your former vehicle.
That would be a dead giveaway. That's true.
I pulled up, and I was like, how did I get here already?
That's why I confused you. You're like, oh, I don't know. I'm already here. You made that joke earlier and I stole it from you.
Thanks. I have to, okay, wait, I have to tell you. So,
by the way, we call that the Matt Mobile.
We do. At work, they were looking for diffuser boxes for our lights because somebody else was like taking pictures of headshots mm-hmm. for staff. And I was like, why don't you just bounce it? And they were looking for something to bounce it. And I was like, somebody's like, do you have like a reflector, you know, from like the UV protectors for cars? And I was like, I think I totally have one, actually. Let me go run out and grab it. I was in the Matmobile and I went out to grab it and I came back and I was like, this isn't mine. So don't judge me when you realize that there's Rick and Morty on the back. Here it is. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Just decided to throw that in yeah. for you guys. just a little extra.
Here was a lot of extra stuff. I found your Moana CD.
Yes, that I don't remember buying.
This is a full Pyrex, by the way. Do you want that back?
No.
All right.
So we ready to talk about Doctor Who?
Yes.
Okay.
But given that the one that we are talking about today, which is Ghost Light.
Ghost Light.
I think perhaps you should have either watched or recorded this whilst under the effects of the gummy.
That would have made sense.
You know, maybe you would have been able to track things better.
I think so. Before we even start, here's what I'm gonna say. I think it should have been one of two things. It should have been more clear or less clear.
It was just not the exact right amount of clear.
Didn't hit that sweet spot.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't tell if this is like a really good episode that's kind of surreal and purposefully hard to follow, like it's the making you think, or if it's just poorly explained.
If you like, I can shed some light on that. It's both. You've got some column A, some column B.
And I know some people have said, like, well, a lot of stuff got cut out, and there's like an extended
version. We watched all that shit too, buddy.
And it's still confusing.
I also have heard that a lot was put back in for the novelization.
I have not read that, so I don't know about that. I mean, I do have a pretty firm grasp on what the plot is now while watching it. No clue. And even I say I have a firm grasp. There's still parts of it that I'm like, huh? But I think I have...
What was in the box?
That is a good question. We'll get to it.
All right.
Let's
talk about episode 1.
We'll get into the nitty gritty. I just wanted to give a vague,
the way
like,
to the
general
zoo.
Overview. Yes.
Yeah. Well,
hey, that's my title.
Let's talk about episode 1, which I've decided to call The Way to the Zoo.
Oh, you bastard.
Joe, do you have any titles?
Yeah, Joe, you said that you were going to create titles.
Because Did you bring any titles?
Did you not bring a title to the title fight?
Yeah, I call this episode 1 Lung Barrow. Which, by the way, fun fact, this was originally going to be Lung Barrow, which is a infamous Doctor Who
That's
story.
Some dark Doctor Who lore.
Yeah, I do feel like before we get into it, this episode comes to the table with history behind it. The writer, Mark Platt, he was not a professional writer at the time. I believe he was a fanfic writer for Doctor Who. This was his first script, and he initially came up with this concept of Lung Barrow, which is the infamous Doctor origin story.
Looms!
Where Time Lords are loomed into existence, and ultimately it turned into this story then. The writer went back and wrote Lung Barrow as a novel. And of course, Doctor Who canon is
Wibbly-wobbly.
Weird. Like, the novels, I think, are canon, but they're not as canon.
Less canon.
Yeah, they're slightly less canon than the TV series. And then that kind of morphed into The Timeless Child.
Yeah.
Do you think Chibnall's going to make Looms canon?
Yes. We have what, 2 episodes left?
2 episodes left, yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. I think the sea devils have looms down at the bottom of the ocean, and they're like, hey, we got these. You want them? And the companion, whomever we have at this point, is like, what are those? And the doctor's like, aha, sit your ass down. I've got lore for you.
And it's just going to be her looking directly into the camera, recounting the entire plot of Lung Barrow.
Just having the novel open and reading it directly to the audience.
So, yeah, there was originally Lung Barrow, and then which is about the ancestral home of the doctor. That got changed into the mansion in this. And there was a whole thing about reading a will and having the will, which became the invitation to the queen thing.
Queen murder.
The queen murder, yes. That's how it shifted into this. So, yes, I've called this episode The Way to the Zoo, and Tony stole it from me.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's not very original, because that's what I called it.
That is, I mean, this is recorded, Joe. Do you think that you can just pull a fast one? I mean, we have tape of this.
So Tony's called it The Way to the Zoo. I've called it Lung Barrel Origins. What is your title, Matt?
Mine is Lost Luggage and Lost Souls.
Ooh, nice.
I picked that up in a bookstore.
Quote from the episode.
All right, so let's get into the details. Let's get into the nitty gritty. So it starts off with just a whole bunch of, like, confusing things.
Just hear some shit.
You say it starts off this way. At what point does it not do that?
Good point. I would say there's a lot of this that isn't confusing. There's a lot where I'm like, I have a vague idea of what's going on, but there's all these, like, I'm wondering if there's just too many plot threads that it's hard to keep the juggling going on, where you're like, hold on, wait, what's going on here? Like, there's 50 characters, and I'm having a hard time following each of them. But if I was, like, following just one plot thread, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. If I went through and watched the episode just following one character, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. But we start off with Lady Pritchard. She's the woman who owns the house. It's, like, hard to explain this plot without, because everything's thrown at you very, like, it just throws you in. But, like, now I know everything. So it's, like, hard not to be like, okay, this is this character. But, like, at the time, it's like, that's just a woman in a house. I don't know who she is.
She gives a prisoner some food.
Yes.
And a newspaper.
Her and some maids. Some creepy maids. I give her a prisoner, some food, and a newspaper, and since I know the future, this is Control, that's the prisoner, and I'm wondering why they gave her a newspaper. Is this what starts her evolution? Because that is her plot line, is Josiah's been evolving. She doesn't get to evolve.
Who?
Yeah.
Okay, so one
thing... Hey, I'm going to be as confusing as this fucking episode.
One thing that I feel like makes the episode even more confusing and difficult to explain without sounding insane is the names given to some of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have characters that are called Control, characters that are called Light, a character that's called Nimrod, which... they're difficult to say these things and convey that you're not necessarily literally talking about the concept of control.
Right.
Or the concept of light. But also you kind of are, because this entire thing works on this weird theater of the absurd dream logic.
You actually need to listen to the actual writer for this episode explain the plot. And how many times he gets tripped up saying control and then being like, not control. I mean, the verb control. Yeah. Like,
both writers, Andrew Cartmell and what's his name? Mark Platt. Both stumble over the control thing. Both of them separately in different interviews.
Taking incredibly common words and making them character names is maybe not the best, especially when you're dealing with such high concept ideas as this episode is.
See, and that's the thing. I'm wondering if it is, like, super high concept, or if it's actually very easy to figure. It's a very simple plot that they've made.
It's
hard to follow, if that makes sense.
I rewatched it this morning, and I will say I was surprised at how straightforward the actual plot is. It's very point A to point B, and then there is a subplot, basically, that's C to D. But it's wrapped up in all this insane dream logic shit. It's using this very simple framework, which, to the episode's detriment, it doesn't explain very well. If it just came out and said what the plot was, it would be much more simple to understand. You just try to explain the plot straight through. It's pretty simple. There are not a lot of deviations to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you start at point A, you end at point B, that's it. But it's using that to jump off and explore all of these other ideas about evolution and change and trauma. And then you've got these incredibly weird character names on top of it.
So then what happens?
Well, we've talked about one scene. Yes. And that's my theory, is that the newspaper starts Control's evolution. So then we meet our next character, Reverend Ernest Matthews, who has some killer mutton chops. He arrives at this place, Gabriel Chase, which is the name of
Gabriel Chase.
The manor.
Such a wonderful house name.
By the way, ours is Millways.
Millways is the name of our house because we are next to a mill.
Yeah, and also Millways is the restaurant at the end of the universe from Hitchhiker's Guide. So that's a double. It's a double thing.
Ours is named Calamity House.
Oh,
you like that?
Apropos,
because in the 3 or 4 years we've lived there, we've had a house fire, tornado, and flood.
What's left?
No.
Don't tempt it.
I think you have to have some sort of like weird evolution aliens move in.
Well, I mean, we do have a basement, so they may already be there.
Yeah,
or as you mentioned that I did not catch, they may have been there and left and they may come back.
Yeah, that is never said in the episode, but it is said in interviews that like, I mean, I think it's like sort of hinted at in the episode itself, but it's never explicitly said. They came at basically the beginning of the planet, left, and then came back. They only got here recently, which is sort of implied by the fact that they've sort of taken over this house that is clearly owned by other people. That's the only like real, and that's part of why it's confusing. There's just a confusing timeline here.
Well, I also, in hearing us talk about it right now, I realize there's no good way to start.
Yeah.
Correct.
There's no grounding element that you can just say, okay, we're going to start here and then introduce all of these other things. Everything kind of does have to get thrown at you at the same time because there's so much.
There is so much. I'm wondering if I should just give like a real brief...
Do you want to give a synopsis of the whole thing?
Yeah, let's...
So then we can get into it without sounding nuts?
Yeah, well, that way we can talk about characters and stuff.
I'm not going to summarize the whole thing, but I am going to summarize what the deal is with Light, Josiah, and Control. Basically, there was a survey team that came to Earth. It was led by Light. They came to Earth to catalog everything. Josiah is the survey guy. He goes out into the planet, evolves into their highest life form, comes back with all the information, gives it to Light. Control just stays there. She just stays
she's
on the
control.
Ship. Yeah, she's the control. She doesn't get to do anything. She's just locked away to be the control. And that's it. That's what they do. They catalog the planet. They leave. They go to other planets. What happened at some point is that Josiah was getting tired of this and then did a mutiny, took the ship back to Earth because he liked Earth, and then he trapped Light and Control, and he's going to evolve into a Victorian gentleman and then take out the queen and get her job because that's how that works. And
I mean, that is it. I think that's how royalty works. If you
yes.
You kill one and you become the new royalty. And then it's
like
just,
Santa Claus that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the royalty clause.
That's the basic plot that is never explained.
Yeah. That's the core to everything.
And I feel like once you have that, everything in this serial makes a lot more sense. You're like, oh, okay. I am no longer confused about what the fuck any of these characters' motivations are. That's my biggest problem is like, I don't understand what these characters are doing, why they're doing
it. The reason why we had to do that up front is because that doesn't all really get pieced together.
Ever?
Almost ever.
Almost ever, yeah. In some of the more esoteric plots of Doctor Who, there will be a scene where the Doctor usually just spells everything out. You know, this is what all happened. That never happens here, which is good, but also I feel like they put a little bit too much faith in the audience.
Yeah.
It's rare that I would say that about a TV series, but in this case, I think it applies.
I think it's interesting to sort of be more vague and stuff and have things kind of happen by a dream logic. But it is also like sometimes not just hard to follow, but like hard to emotionally follow because you're like, it's hard for me to connect to things because I'm like, I don't know what's happening. I don't even have like a rough grasp of what's happening. When we did Warrior's Gate, that's another thing that doesn't super explain itself, but it was something that I could still follow. Like, I have an idea of what people's motivations are and stuff. And sometimes in this, I'm like, wait, what's this character wanting? Hold on. I'm confused about everybody's relationship. But I'm better on it now. Yeah. So the next thing we get is the TARDIS arrives in a lab or nursery? Both? There's a little rocking horse that has glowing eyes that never gets explained.
There are multiple things that have glowing eyes that never get explained. There's an emu that has glowing eyes.
That's true. There's a bunch of animals with glowing eyes. Never gets explained. This is one of the few things that does actually get explained in a deleted scene, which is that it is Josiah keeping, it's like a
security cameras
basically.
Oh, okay.
He's been that's how he watches people throughout the house. That's the only thing that gets explained in the deleted scenes. Everything
that's
else.
That's kind of what I assumed. So maybe that was a good call on, yeah, we'll give that one as a read on faith.
Though there is a scene where it like seems like the place is haunted. So it could just be haunted animals. It's whatever your heart wants it to be.
Like canon.
I will say the one through line, the one plot thread in this serial that makes sense the whole way through, and I enjoy it entirely, is the Doctor and Aces plot.
Mm.
Well, Aces specifically. Like, all of that makes perfect sense and is easy to follow, which is good because it is the emotional core of the episode. So it's...
Both of them are acting their damn faces off, too.
This is a really good episode for their dynamic. It's their dialogue is great. Their interactions are great. One thing that I didn't realize, even rewatching it this morning, was that it was never said, but the reason that the Doctor is going through all of this with Ace is that he intends her to go to Gallifrey and study and be a Time Lady.
Oh,
that's
really?
Why he's training her like this. And he talks about this being like an exam, but that was what it was meant to lead up to. Was her going to Gallifrey and studying to be a Time Lady, essentially.
Can you do that?
Who the hell knows at this point? Because I thought Time Lords were a race, and then they were more of a title, because they're like Sheboygans or something. I don't know.
That's confusing.
But sure, we'll go with yes.
Yeah, okay.
They do mention many times that this is some kind of initiation or some kind of test for Ace.
Yeah.
Without specifying at all why or what kind or...
I mean, I guess the idea was like, I was taking it as like, it's a companion test, you know?
Right.
We're doing an adventure, you try to figure out what the adventure is.
Yeah.
You take the lead on this one.
Yeah, is it
safe
here?
I'm just going to drop you off and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, because he's like, what time period do you think we're in? Where, you know, all this sort of stuff. And she's sort of figuring stuff out. There's a little bit more of this in the deleted scenes of her sort of like going through the stuff and being like just doing some more deductive stuff. But the one thing she does hope is that she hopes it's not a haunted house. She doesn't want to do that ever again and says it very ominously.
She obviously did not see the title of the episode or she would have known that there was a ghost.
I was waiting for a ghost the whole time, and it doesn't really show up until, like, episode 3?
It's really more of a metaphorical ghost.
Yeah.
And it is a metaphorical ghost, yes. So they're continuing their investigations, and they find a snuff box just on the floor that has the initials RFC on it, and it's radioactive. And they're looking at it, and a spear comes down between them, and it is held by an explorer. Who is very offended by Ace's lack of clothes, even though she's not lacking that many clothes.
Yeah, basically her shoulders are uncovered.
How dare she?
And that I guess, is making him think impure thoughts.
And I believe the Doctor calls her a savage at one point.
He's mad for clavicles. He references the term noble savage. But one thing that I want to say on that is...
Feels very Leela.
It does, but there are several times where the Doctor has little asides to Ace, and they could be taken kind of insultingly, but I don't know if it's the performance or the chemistry between them or what, but I never got the sense, even when he called her like a noble savage or Eliza for Eliza Doolittle, it always felt like a conspiratorial...
We both know what's happening.
...attitude
yeah.
between them, and that the joke was on these people that they're dealing with, not on her. Which is something that the Fourth Doctor and, say, Leela didn't have.
Though I will say, the Doctor does do something incredibly dickish, but we'll get there.
I mean, taking her there?
Yeah, I mean, just taking her here is a pretty...
Okay, so first of all, just wait, and second of all, go on.
I know, I've heard some things. This is a theme of the Doctor's. But this explorer starts talking to them and says that he's there to try to save another explorer named Redvers Finn Cooper, which is what the RFC on the snuff box is. He's trying to save him from Josiah Samuel Smith, who we'll meet in a minute. And then he just sort of goes around and he's rambling and waving off flies that aren't there. And then he pulls a gun on him. And then we meet a butler that's a Neanderthal for some reason that no one questions. That's another thing. I'm like, it seems weird that no one's like, what the fuck is going on here? They all just sort of accept it.
Even the Doctor gets there and is like, you're a Neanderthal, right? And he's like, yeah. And the Doctor's like, all right, cool.
I think actually Ace says that. Like, if doctor said it, I'd be like, yeah. But Ace is like, that's a Neanderthal, right? And the doctor's like, yeah. And they're like, oh, okay.
I mean, okay, to be fair, like, Ace feels like the kind of companion that would just roll with it. And she's been with the doctor long enough to be like, okay, we're in Victorian England and there's a Neanderthal. Okay, yeah, sure. That's just what we're doing this week. He's special guest star, Neanderthal.
And that's also another clue to how they came at the beginning.
Yeah.
Is that they've got this guy.
But there isn't really anyone else, I think, to question it. Except for maybe the...
Reverend?
The Reverend guy. But he's so haughty and up his own ass, I think he just would look at it as like an ethnic help.
Well, to be fair, that's also what happens when there's another character that'll show up later.
Yeah, he's coming too.
And that is...
Well, actually, he's already there. He's
chilling.
He's in a drawer.
He's in a drawer somewhere waiting to join the plot. Yes.
We even check in on him. He's like, oh, yeah, he's still fresh.
So back to this explorer guy. He's complaining of a light that he saw. Then he finally finds Redvers. In a window reflection. He's Redvers. He was Redvers the whole time.
It was him all along.
Dun, dun, dun.
He's gone nutty. That's what's happened.
Why is he there?
Because it's the queen.
Yeah, because he has an invitation to the queen, to see the queen.
Okay.
And Josiah wants to use that to get to the queen.
But, like, why is he there?
Because Redvers has a plus one.
Yeah.
But why is he there?
Because he needs Redvers.
So, like, he got...
Redvers has the invitation, and he has a plus one.
Redvers was a big game hunter of renown. He got an invitation to meet with the queen. Josiah found out about it. And so he...
kidnapped him?
Yeah, he, like, kidnapped him and...
made him go crazy.
Yeah. And his plan is, basically, he just wants him for his piece of paper.
But he's got to use Redvers to get there.
Right. Because
he can't get in without Redvers. That becomes an important plot point.
I love that his entire take over the British Empire plot hinges on what's essentially manners.
Well, he is trying to evolve into the proper
right. Villain. That's what I mean by this working on dream logic. Like, that is so stupid that it's beautiful. Like, it works perfectly for the episode and what he's doing.
Part of me wants to see what would happen if he did it. Like, if he got in with the queen and then killed her, then what does he do from there?
I mean, I know in his head he's just like, it is literally the Santa Claus. I'm in charge now.
I'm the queen now, yeah.
I think he just, like, learned the rules of royalty from chess.
Yeah, he's the pawn that's going to become the queen.
Yeah, and if he takes the queen, then... like, he wins the game. That's how
chess works.
England works.
And I want to make it clear, none of this is, like, mentioned until episode 3.
Oh, yeah. Episode 3 is where the entirety of the queen killing plot comes in.
I mean, honestly,
as well as light.
Basically, all of the clues to how this plot even makes sense doesn't get revealed until the last episode.
Episodes 1 and 2 are just vibes. Episode 3 is plot.
Here's something interesting. I feel like this was originally going to be a four-parter and it got cut down to 3.
Something like that.
Yeah, but also, there's a bunch of people being like, this is one of the few times where I was like, it could be a four-parter.
Literally every cast member is just like, I had no idea what we were doing. No idea. Like, you just try to find what's there and play with that, but, like, I didn't understand it. There's also on the Blu-ray, there's the behind the sofa where they have, like, actors and the companions and stuff watching the episode, and it's Polly, Tegan, and Nyssa are watching the episode. And, like, just halfway through episode 2, they're just like, I don't like this. I don't know what's happening at all. And, like, they just stop cutting to them for a while, and I think it's because they just stopped watching it. But yeah, this was supposed to be 4 episodes, and they cut it down to 3. But Battlefield was supposed to be 3 episodes, and they expanded it to 4. Why couldn't they just fix that?
My guess would be someone didn't like the script as much as they did Battlefield, and also they wanted another week of Nicholas Courtney. So they're like, let's do more Battlefield and less of whatever this is.
Like, just it was still, apparently it was still too long because they cut out a bunch of scenes. They were actually cutting out stuff while they were filming. Because they're like, they were running out of time to film it. And also they're like, we can tell this is going over way too long.
I mean, to be fair, I've shot stuff like that too. Where it's like, we have an hour of light left. Fuck it. The audience can just make up some shit.
They'll figure it out.
We'll just add it in narration.
Have a little ticker that runs across the bottom. This is the plot.
So that's just a loose cannon recon. So he's...
Shout out to loose cannon.
Redvers finds himself and we realize he's not right in the head. Lady Pritchard comes in and takes him away. And he's just shouting about how he doesn't want to be put in the interior. Which I guess is just that room they lock him in.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's nothing like
they sci-fi. Put him in a straitjacket and just stick him in a cupboard.
And then they're like, hello, Dr. Nace. We'd like to invite you to the drawing room to meet Josiah. We just accept that you're here.
Everybody rolls with everything too much in this one. Is part of the problem. At no point does anyone ask for any kind of explanation. It's just like, oh, two people are here? Okay, let's have lunch.
Yeah, why not? So the doctor and Ace go and they meet the Reverend, who thinks that the doctor is Josiah Smith, who has crazy ideas about evolution.
And guess what? The doctor rolls with this.
Of course he does.
To be fair, this is meant to be Ace's spotlight, and the doctor is just kind of chilling on the sidelines. So I can see that, and also clearly, like, this is one of my favorite uses of the doctor, where he stumbles into a mystery, he's clearly interested in it, and he just decides to insert himself as an agent of chaos.
Yes.
And he's like, because he even says to Ace as an aside, like, if he's confused now, he'll be completely bamboozled by the time I'm done with him.
Yeah, and I think Ace is like, I'll help.
Yeah. Ace is like, I am on board with that.
It's good. It's so good. They're so good.
They are.
Like, he even, like, tips Nimrod, because, like, Nimrod's, like, trying to be like, yeah. That's not Josiah. And the doctor's like, tips him to be like, go away. I'm
with a tooth. A tooth that he just has?
That he knows that cavemen like.
What is Nimrod's reaction to it is great, too, because he's like, whoa, you're truly a wise and powerful man. And, like, it totally works. He's like, oh, shit, that man just carries around a tooth on him.
Yeah.
That guy knows his shit. I'm out.
I'm just going to go make some sandwiches.
Is that like if you like give a saint's finger or something to somebody?
I don't know.
A saint's finger?
Yeah, what would it take? Like, you're a Catholic. You're the most religious out of all of us, probably.
If you handed me an old dusty finger, it would not go well.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure you wouldn't be impressed by the fact that this person just handed you a saint's finger? Like, they pre-planned?
How would you know it's a saint's finger?
Yeah, yes.
What if they give you, like, the Shroud of Turin or something?
I mean, that would be kind of crazy. I'd have to think twice about that.
There you go. What religious object would make you go, oh, okay, and then leave?
I don't know.
This is a question Mark Platt had to ask himself
yes.
while writing this episode.
It would have to be something that would, like, by looking at it.
That's, I mean, Shroud of Turin.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty.
I could tell that it was real, yeah. You know?
Well, to be fair, everybody rolls with everything in this episode, so I assume anything that was given would be taken at face value.
Because here's the thing, you can buy Catholic relics, like, anywhere. I've got water from the Jordan River or like dirt from fucking Bethlehem. Like I have that stuff. It's sitting in a closet.
We have our Google Home in a what is that?
It's a holy water bowl.
Sprinkling things.
When the parish that I went to as a kid, they redecorated. They remodeled the church, and so they got rid of all this stuff. And when they got rid of all this stuff, they were like, anything anybody wants. So I have a pew in the garage from the parish that I grew up at, and I have a holy water bowl.
It's got a big cross as the like back plate.
It's a big metal cross and a bowl underneath, and I immediately like got it and put it in front of my... I bolted it right to the front door. And for a while it had moon water in it.
And now it has a Google
and
Home.
And now the Google Home sits inside of it. And I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't think Jesus is mad about it.
He probably likes the convenience.
I might find out differently later.
We'll see. We're just blessing our Google searches.
Yeah. But you could
get the best results.
you never have to click anything except I'm feeling lucky.
The point is, Catholic relics are like super easy to come by. You know what I mean? They're not impressive because it's like everybody's out there like, hey, this piece of wood is actually a chunk from the cross. And you're like, no, it's not.
It's from the Ark. I know.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Reverend believes the doctor is Josiah and also again brings up that Ace looks underdressed. The doctor sends Ace off with Josiah Smith's ward. Her name is Gwendolyn. And they're going to go get changed. And we'll get to what they do in a minute. And it's very nice. It's very good.
Yep.
But then a sunglasses wearing Josiah Smith with bad skin.
He does look pretty rad.
Now, you say sunglasses. Yes. I want to point out that when Josiah comes in, he is wearing sunglasses because he is afraid of light. Or
averse to
to light. Lucifugus or whatever Ace says.
Yeah, that's a good joke, too, where she says that. And he's like, he's also afraid of lights. Yeah.
But also, they're not sunglasses. They're tiny, tiny sunglasses. And they're amazing. They're just big enough to, like, cover his eyeballs.
I got very, like, Gary Oldman and Dracula. Yeah,
it was
vibes.
Very, very Dracula. Mm-hmm. Which Ace calls him Dracula at one point.
This is before that version of Dracula.
Oh, long before. That was in the 90s.
But he immediately comes in and says, dim the lights, and the lights go down. And this is the first time in a long time that we've had dark lighting on Doctor Who. Not just brightly lit sets. He's into evolution, and he collects moths. That's what we know about this guy. And he's very...
And he has tiny sunglasses.
He has very tiny sunglasses. And here's the part that I don't understand. We cut to a straight-jacketed Redvers in his room as the snuff box opens... And light starts pouring out of it, and he starts screaming. What the fuck is that?
That's the ghost.
That's I mean...
Marcellus Wallace's soul.
I don't understand.
Because it's not light, because light's trapped somewhere else.
Maybe it's a bit of light?
Well, okay, so I was trying to figure out why Josiah was so averse to light. The only thing that I can figure is that light, in addition to being this being... Jesus, I sound like Mark Platt.
Control, control.
Yes.
I'll delete.
In addition to being an entity, he sort of travels or is tied to light.
Like he is light? Like yeah. All light is also
yeah,
light?
He's also part of light. Now, why the radioactive snuff box glows as though it has a nuclear bomb inside, I don't know.
My theory, basically Josiah did a mutiny and is utilizing light's technology to do this. He somehow caught Revers and made him go crazy, and that must be a piece of tech. That's all I can assume.
That's like used to like keep him non-functioning?
Yeah, yeah. He does seem to...
He has abilities.
I think someone said, or I think at one point, he said something that he saw light and it made him cuckoo bonkers or whatever. So I guess that it's technology that Josiah harnessed to kind of drive him mad.
It's probably the same technology that helped him evolve. The same technology he uses to de-evolve people, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
And the same technology that he probably used to evolve the Neanderthal a little bit. Because I assume that guy didn't just speak English and wear a tuxedo. And
that seems very prejudiced of you.
Wow. Wow, Joe.
They didn't have English or tuxedos back then.
Wow. Look, there is no reason to think that...
You know what? Fuck those Geico guys.
Ass motherfuckers.
I saw an episode of their sitcom. I'm fully on board with that. It's fine.
It's bad. I watched it too.
Yeah, it's not good.
Nick Kroll was on that. He was one of the titular cavemen.
That was a wild time.
You think it's so bizarre that they turned an ad into a TV show. And
oh no, not an ad. We've had those before. I remember the California Raisins.
Ernest as well?
Yeah. But just the fact that you had cavemen hawking car insurance in the first place, and then the American public was like, you know what I want more of? Those fucking guys.
You know, we actually have a TV show on right now that was originally an ad. That is a very popular show right now. Ted Lasso was was an ad first for something. I think it was like sports on, like soccer on American TV somewhere. But that's what they were promoting. But that at least makes more sense than Geico Cavemen. Did they hawk insurance on the sitcom?
On the show?
I don't think so. I think it was just We want to peel back the layers of their lives and see what they do when they're not hawking insurance.
I feel like it could work. I feel like it could have worked.
I feel like it could work if Nimrod were part of it.
Yeah, I like that guy.
He's good.
It needed better writers than
he's
it had.
He's a good egg.
There is an egg in this later. okay, so...
Stupid.
Now let's get to the good thing. Ace and Gwendolyn have changed clothes based on Ace's suggestion... Because Ace is just gonna queer up the place. That's what's happening.
Ace gonna
1,000%.
They come out in full on like tuxedos.
It's very good.
Yep.
It's great. I enjoy seeing it with my eyeballs. It made me happy.
It was very nice. This is must be Ace's girlfriend of the week. Ace gets a girlfriend every serial.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Good for her.
Yeah. Which is way better than where she started in Dragonfire, where it was implied that she had some sort of relationship with what's-his-face.
Solomon Gix. I've forgotten his name.
That's right. Mr. Gix.
Glitz.
Glitz.
Yeah.
Yes. Savalom Glitz. They changed it when he got to Ellis Island. It was originally...
But yeah, they go in and check on Radvers. The light blows out the whole room. It's not explained. And
nor is it important.
Nor is it important, no.
Yeah.
Then Nimrod goes to the cellar and pulls up some curtains, revealing that it's basically a spaceship. We're in a spaceship room. And as he's fiddling with stuff, something knocks him over the head and he falls down.
No. He gets a little shoulder tap.
It's enough to knock him unconscious.
Yeah. It's meant to be like this savage blow that... knocks him unconscious, but really it's just somebody wrapping his left shoulder with a cane.
And then he falls down and the prisoner from the room watches and is very pleased by this. Okay, this is another thing that gets cut out, that it is pretty obvious that she somehow... These things that attack him are not control. Control is controlling something else. God damn it. But like, they cut out literally every line that makes it clear that she's controlling these things.
The husks?
Yeah,
she's controlling the husks?
Yeah. Okay. Like, there are lines where she's, like, giving them direct commands and stuff. They cut out every line where she does that. And it's like, they're purposely trying to make this more confusing. I don't know why.
And we should point out, because for the benefit of anyone who hasn't watched it or can't see, the husks that we talk about are Josiah's cast-off shells.
Yes.
As he has evolved.
They have just basic motor functions, basically.
Yeah. And there's one that's like insectoid. There's one that's like reptilian.
There was supposed to be a third one, but they didn't make it. I forget what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be some other type of animal. They were also supposed to look somewhat like Josiah.
Okay, that would have made more sense. Number one. Number two.
They didn't have the budget. They just had some cheap bug and insect masks.
The web planet 2.0. Okay, I never would have gathered that control was controlling the husks. Like, I did not pick up on that. Okay. So why did she want Nimrod given a little tap?
I think she was knocking him out because he was kind of her captor, and then she was going to have the husks get, I don't know, like keys from him or whatever, and get her out. That's what she's trying to use the husks for, is to get her out.
Okay. Why can she control Josiah's husks?
I don't know.
Is it just because her name is Control?
Could be. Okay. I mean, also I think it's like they are very basic. So that's she's true. Like, they will respond to very simple commands.
Okay. That feels like a weakness. Like, you just leave them with the wrong person and somebody's going to die.
It all makes sense. No, it doesn't.
I love your optimism.
Because actually, that's the next scene. I guess she does get out because Smith gets a phone call and it's Control. And she's like, I'm out.
Oh,
he's like,
oh, which
shit.
Was very polite. I mean, she's wanting to evolve into a Victorian lady. It's very polite that she would call, ring him up and let him know that she had loosed her bounds.
And I'm coming to get you.
Yes.
She has a great voice, by the way.
She does.
And it's at this point that Ace realizes that we're in Perryvale. And this is her haunted house from the future. And she is pissed about it.
Yeah.
And she should be.
It's very unhappy.
This scene is so good.
So good.
Where the doctor just basically admits, like, yeah, I brought you here on purpose because it's your biggest fear. Fuck you, I guess.
I think part of what makes this scene so good is that it doesn't make any effort to be like, oh yeah, the doctor's in the right here. It's like, the doctor did this fucked up thing and Ace is mad about it. Anyway, we're going to watch this for a minute.
And that's where your title comes from too, right? Because he's talking about the lost souls, lost luggage thing. I think is in this scene.
She, when they're arguing, Ace asks the doctor if there's anything that he is afraid of or has an intense dislike of. And one thing that he mentions is bus stations, because, as the title says, he says they're full of lost luggage and lost souls, which also could describe the TARDIS, to be honest.
That's true.
Also fair. Remember that time you got lost at a bus station?
I was in a bus station overnight. It was terrible.
I've ridden a bus
Paducah, Kentucky.
I've ridden a bus one time. It smelled of Fritos and despair, and I never wanted to do it again.
I did it twice because I love Tony. That's the only reason I wanted to go see you. So the next episode should just be Ace takes his ass to a bus station.
Leaves him there.
Just strands him there.
That would have been the very first story of season 27.
Just abandons his ass.
The bus station of doom.
Do you think Midnight is just Ace? The creature in Midnight,
yeah,
is just Ace somehow. Like,
ha, fuck you, ass.
She played the long game and was like, all right, we are gonna fuck you up now.
That's canon, baby. Josiah has a scene with the Reverend, who is just yelling about evolution and how it's wrong and bad. And then Josiah has, I think, Pritchard or a maid, I don't remember which, chloroform the Reverend. Just so he's not in the plot for a while.
They
don't do anything to him.
They chloroform so that he can wake up in episode 3 and be back in it without any...
It's the next episode.
Yeah, it's episode 2.
And while this is happening, Gwendolyn plays the piano and sings That's the Way to the Zoo, which...
is why I named that episode this.
I like when Doctor Who does weird little musical interludes. Oh, no, they knock him out so that they can go and, like, fiddle with his DNA, I guess.
Does that happen in here?
It doesn't happen until he wakes up.
Yeah.
I didn't get the impression that, like... it was from the banana he ate or anything. I figured that they knocked him out, they fucked with him, and like he was slowly changing.
Then he woke up.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's sure.
Okay.
It's not in there, but okay.
Again, there's a lot. Like, you have to work out before you watch this episode because it asks you to do a lot of heavy lifting.
A lot. And then the next scene is written by a third writer. Or at least this was his idea. It was Ben Aronovich's idea. And having heard that, that makes sense because it's about racism. And that guy loves putting racism into a Doctor Who script. He's done it twice already. She talks about why...
I mean, to be fair, it's not like...
Being racist.
We need more racism in here.
Right.
It's specifically saying racism is bad.
Yeah, well... not necessarily so much in Battlefield. It's bad.
I mean, well, I think this ties back to Battlefield.
I kind of wish this had happened before First. Battlefield. Because, like, we had the one scene in Remembrance where she finds the sign.
Right, right.
If we had this second where she's clearly, like, stating, like, these white kids firebombed my, presumably, person of color friend.
Yeah.
And that, like, seriously upset her. And then we had the scene. And,
I'm sorry, I love the understatement of that. They firebombed my friend, and it upset her some.
Yeah. Like, well, you know.
It was a bad day.
So her response to it is to go firebomb another house, by the way.
Well, no, her response to it was to run away.
Yeah.
She got to the house, and she's like,
evil.
This place is evil. I'm gonna burn this bitch.
Yeah.
As you do.
But if you had those two scenes, and then you had the scene... in Battlefield, where she just says a racist slur, you'd be more like, yeah, that's very out of character for
right.
her.
Yeah. No, I can see that.
But as it is, I hate that scene in Battlefield. Even with that, I wouldn't want that scene in Battlefield, even if they did swap the order. I think that was a bad idea, and they should not have done it. I don't need to see Ace saying a racial slur. Just gonna double down on that opinion of mine. But, yes, that's what happened. They burned her friend's house down, and then she ran away, just a confused and upset teenager, and then found this haunted house and felt the evil there and then burned it down. Then the doctor talks to Josiah Smith, who he basically is like, you're an alien, right? And Josiah is like, I'm not an alien, but I do need your help stopping a creature. I'll pay you lots of money. And the doctor's like, that's a lot of money, but no, I'm not interested.
I do like that he's like, no way. And he's like, how much?
Yeah, I have no interest in money. How much?
And he tells him, he's like, wow, now I know how much you want this taken care of. All right, yeah. Thanks.
Also, I know it's just probably British currency at the time, but like, it doesn't look like money. It looks like a grocery list. Like, it just looks like a handwritten 8.5 by 11 piece of notepaper.
Victorian value, is what I think they say. And then Ace finds Nimrod knocked out in the basement, and then she finds the husks. And this is the first time we actually full-on see the husks, because before it was a, you know, monster POV shot. I thought the husks were calling her Ratkin at the time, because I had no idea what the fuck was happening.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
But it's Control from the room yelling out, calling Ace Ratkin. And I didn't know what that was, but now I guess it just means, like, she's like a rat.
She's a mammal. Like, yeah. I think from Control's perspective, she's just related to rats and apes and, you know, any kind of mammal creature.
And that's the end of episode one, as Control calling Ace a ratkin and these husks.
So now we're going to move on to episode two, which I have called One-Way Ticket to Java. Joe, did you have any titles? Did you want to say one?
From Husk Till Dawn. Matt, what do you got?
It's not going to top that, but I've got another lift from the episode. A Desert of Smoke and Straight Lines.
Ooh, nice. These are all very atmospheric. Mm. Mine are dumb.
Again, episodes one and two, just vibes.
There's so much weird shit that happens in this. The doctor just sees Gwendolyn looking at a policeman in a drawer. And she says that he's from Java, and Josiah sent her dad to Java.
Wait, does that mean he's not dead? He's just sleeping? Because I thought Java was like a metaphor for dying.
I mean, Java is a metaphor for death. But like...
But that guy's not dead.
No, but he's from the past.
Yeah, he's been there for like 2 years or something.
But is her dad dead?
I think
or
her
is
dad
he
is
frozen
dead.
In a drawer?
I think he's dead.
Okay.
I think he's dead, and I think that became kind of the catch-all term for putting somebody on ice.
Okay.
There's a lot of talk of sending people to Java, which means kill them. That happens a lot from here on out.
Which was very reminiscent, oddly, of Arsenic and Old Lace. Because
the basement.
Yeah, they had a guy like the hunter who was crazy, and he thought that he was Teddy Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And these two little old ladies would kill lonely old men who came to stay with them and give them to their brother, Teddy, who was digging the Panama Canal in the basement. And he would take the body down and bury it. So Panama or Java, take your pick.
I wonder if this was inspired by that, possibly.
Possibly, because that was much older than Ghostlight. So.
Yeah. But Nimrod swings a lantern at the husks, and they don't like light because they are still susceptible to that. And Ace hits them with a cane. Pritchard and Gwendolyn try to persuade the doctor to go to bed, but he's determined to find Ace, and the maids point a gun at him. So they're being a little more persuasive.
The maids, by the way, I don't think we've mentioned, just kind of live in the walls.
Yeah, like,
sweet, and then what?
At night?
Yeah.
Like, as soon as the clock strikes night, whatever time that is.
Wait, what?
It's 6 p.m.
Yeah, 6
they
p.m.
They pop out at 6 p.m.
The walls,
exactly.
The walls raise up, and Pritchard and the maids just, like, exit from within the walls.
Because there is daytime staff, and they get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, they're like, nobody stays past dark. I don't know why they're from the Northeast. Lots of countries have a north.
Because I forgot to mention that. Because, like, yeah, like right in the beginning of episode one, when like someone lets the Reverend in, and then she's like, "We got to get out." Bye.
Yep. See ya.
And then the secret doors slide open, and these maids come out.
What are they doing in there,
maiden? I don't know.
I don't know. I thought maybe they were like robots or something, but no, as we'll find out in episode three, they are clearly humans.
I guess they're just like mind controlled.
Yeah, I guess they just kind of go in there and like shut down.
Because
why do they have have mind-controlled staff and then, like, non-mind-controlled staff.
Unions. You can't have the staff work 24 hours, so you've got, like, a day staff and a night staff.
It's also possible Josiah is not able to control them during the day, because he has to hide out during the day, because he's a Dracula. Yeah.
He's gotta sleep.
But who...
Love, you and just gotta, you just from? Gotta roll with it.
I understand, like, the difference. Like, who got mind controlled and who was like, oh, well, I can't get the cook, so. And how does the cook keep just coming back into work every day and being like, yeah, half the people I work with are robots that live in the walls.
Well, no, she never sees them.
She never sees them.
Because they don't come out until...
Six.
Six.
Until they leave.
And she's like, mm-hmm. I am fucking gone before six.
Because it's haunted. Okay. Oh, and it's possible these maids are Josiah's and not... They weren't there originally. That could be a thing.
Did they know...
Because they he has just a collection of people in drawers.
Did the day staff know about Josiah? Or they don't?
The day staff know about Josiah, I think.
Because they were just serving this family, and then this dude showed up. So they would know that, like, this isn't right.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
So maybe the wall people, maybe the wall maids, are the former owners, and they're being mind controlled. And then when Josiah came in like a cuckoo, that necessitated hiring this new staff.
Oh, they're new!
Yeah, so it's like, that way they didn't see anything wrong with this weirdo in tiny sunglasses just like chilling in this house for no reason.
You need somebody that's more competent than just these mind-controlled people.
Yeah.
To do stuff during the day when he's sleeping. Yeah, these are probably a new staff.
And the mind-controlled ones are the old ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they just live in the walls.
Okay.
I think that makes sense. We got it. We got there.
Do they poop?
In the walls?
There's probably like a toilet.
In the walls?
I mean, there's probably like whole rooms back
toilets?
There.
Toilets? Where are we with plumbing?
They're not like in the walls. It's just a secret door opens and they come out. They're probably like sleeping quarters and whatnot.
I think they just walk into the walls and stand there for 12 hours and then come back out.
Well, then they poop when they come out. They hold it all day.
Okay. I guess their metabolism's lowered, so it's fine.
You know how being mind-controlled lowers your metabolism?
Yeah. Oh, we've talked about wall maids for so long now.
I don't poop. I don't pee.
Ace threatens to smash this big glowing egg thing on the wall in the spaceship. Nimrod was trying to save her before this, but now he's like, oh no, you can't do that. You can't smash this thing. And then they get into a fight over it and wind up smashing it anyway.
Yeah, he's like, I must protect the light, and immediately smashes the light.
And this causes an alarm to go off, which the
doctor... steam?
Yeah, steam just shoots out of it.
Yeah.
This causes an alarm to go off, which gives the doctor the advantage, because everybody's like, what's going on? And he pulls out the scanner he used on the box to find out that it's radioactive. Yeah. He pulls that scanner out and takes Josiah hostage with it, pretending that it's a gun. And they go to the cellar.
Yeah, it looks like a touchless forehead thermometer, kind of.
Yeah.
When he first did that and pointed it at... Who's he pointing it at? Josiah.
Yeah.
I didn't clock for a second that it was that radiation, that Geiger counter. It struck me how legitimately unnerving it is to see the doctor with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like, that is... I never realized how...
It's not the first time he's had a gun, but...
No, but it's wrong somehow. Like, fundamentally, it's wrong.
To me, it looked like an inventory gun. That's what it looked like.
He's just got a label maker.
Yeah.
It's just a label maker. He's going around, he's like, this is mine. This is mine. This is mine.
While they go, Gwendolyn just has a complete meltdown, breakdown, just starts crying and freaking out, and very confused about everything. And I'm like, finally.
I see someone has read the script.
Finally, someone besides me is confused. And Pritchard comes up and does not exactly comfort her. She just calls her a trollop.
Dressed like a music hall trollop.
I guess we can go ahead and explain this too. They are mother-daughter. They don't know that?
They don't know that.
They've been somewhat mind-controlled, I guess, by Josiah. And they've had a bit... And I think it's partially he's controlling them, and also they've had a tremendous amount of trauma, so they're all kinds of fucked up.
Yeah. But Gwendolyn is made to believe that she is Josiah's ward, and I think Pritchard is made to believe she's just like the
head of the maids.
Yeah, the she leads the wall people.
Leader of the wall people. They go to the cellar, Josiah and the doctor and Ace, and they all meet up. But Josiah gets a gun out of a desk down there and pulls it on them. And he's like, I know that's a radioactive scanner thing. I'm not an idiot.
Which makes me wonder why he went along with it.
That's
hardly the biggest question of this story.
To be fair, when he puts it in his back, he doesn't see it.
Yeah,
and
true,
once they get
true,
down in the
true.
Cellar, he's like, he got that at Costco. But he makes them try to repair the broken wall thing. And then, like, some explanation stuff happens. Some genetic codes pop up on the screen, and the doctor explains what the husks are to Ace. At some point, Josiah gets a face full of steam from the thing, which Ace gets the gun away from Josiah. And then they run away as the husks start chasing them. And Control also has gotten out at this point.
Control gets out.
And she's yelling for her freeness.
Yep. Give me freeness. Also, someone at some point says, you're insane if the membrane is broken. Which I guess is what that honeycomb thing is on the wall. Which I guess is what is holding back light.
Right.
Yes.
Like, light is trapped in the walls of the spaceship. But also as light.
He's light.
There's
when he's trapped in the honeycomb thing. So he's like,
there's
all
a thing,
light.
There's a thing that just,
and not a person.
I don't know if they're doing it on purpose, but it angers me so much. When we finally get to light, they say that he just appears and disappears.
Found out she's an angel.
He appears and disappears, and the doctor says he travels at the speed of thought.
Yes.
And it made me so angry.
Ace asks, how does light move so fast? The doctor says, it travels at the speed of thought. Which is both infuriating and perfect. Which kind of describes my feelings on this episode as a whole.
Yeah, that's a good summary of the whole thing. But then we find out that Smith is evolving. And Ace picks a bit of his skin off. Like, when they're going up in the lift, because, like, there's a lift down to the cellar.
Oh, as they get in the lift, Control has rushed out, and she is reaching through the lift door, trying to grab the doctor and strangle him. And he adorably tries to shake the hand that she's strangling him with. Just perfect Seventh Doctor to me.
He always likes to do a good greeting. Usually it's with the hat.
But, I mean, he's being strangled, so it's like, hello.
Like, that's all we've seen so far of Control is her eye and, like, her mummy-wrapped hand.
Yeah, she's very gauzy.
And then
she's got a Gaussian blur over her. In that she's wrapped in a lot of gauze.
We get the Reverend back in the plot. And this is the first hint at the Queen, if you're paying attention. If you're not, it's not, you don't notice. Like, he's pointing a gun at the Reverend. And you think, oh, is he just going to shoot him? But he shoots a photo of the Queen. There's a picture of the Queen on the wall, and he shoots that, and that's what wakes the Reverend up.
Because it's such a non-entity at the end of things, I had forgotten completely about the I'ma take over the Empire by killing the Queen plot, and I thought it was just like a one-off political statement where, like, Josiah was just like, fuck this Queen in particular, and that's it. Like, they weren't going to say anything else about it. I forgot that his whole goal was to murder the Queen.
It's subtle foreshadowing that I missed until I started cleaning up my notes. He wakes up and immediately just goes back into talking about, like, how evolution is bad and he's not an ape. And then he eats a banana and his hands are hairy. So he's de-evolving.
I also want to point out that as they get back up and Josiah is molting, Ace or the doctor, I don't remember whom, said that he sounded a little husky.
Oh, right. God damn it. Pretty sure that was the doctor.
Yeah.
But they, as the Reverend turns more into an ape, Josiah and Gwendolyn prepare to send him off to Java. We'll see what that is later.
Which technically he doesn't go to Java. He goes to Display Case.
I think it's the same thing, maybe.
Okay.
Like, maybe it is just killing them and putting them in a thing. I don't know. He'd become part of the collection.
Yeah. Before he devolves, he rails against evolution, saying that he evolved from a protoplasmic globule.
It's good. That's good words. Then there's just the doctor and Ace do some research and some bantering before Ace just passes out, falls asleep, because who knows how long she's been awake.
This feels feels very odd to me, pacing wise.
Yeah.
Because we've been very, like, having a fight, running around, getting captured, and then, like, Ace wakes up and there's a maid, and the maid's like, here's breakfast. And you're like, wait.
Also, it's 5 p.m.
Are they just staying there? Like, it's a hotel?
The doctor says, like, we don't have to worry about Josiah because, you know, he'll be away until dark. And so, yeah, they just are like,
go stake his ass.
I guess we're going to just fuck off and, like, use this as a B&B.
But, like, the day staff is, like, waiting on them. They know that they're staying there and are, like, serving them. But, like, why? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Manners.
They're Victorians. They have to.
They're Victorian gentlemen and gentlewomen.
Because it's Josiah's house, right?
No.
No, it's not. It's the Pritchard house.
But like, that's what everybody thinks.
Well, yeah. But see, that's why I know that the day staff do know about Josiah, because they follow orders from him. Because it was on his orders to let in the Reverend, because he sent for the Reverend.
So why are they just cooking breakfast for Ace?
Because
they're nice.
They're guests.
Yeah, they're guests.
They're guests in the house. If you're like a good maid and you have a house guest,
they have a whole dress for her. But are they guests?
They're guests. Sure.
Okay.
And also, like, I think it was at this point that the doctor just has gotten tired of everybody commenting on Ace's clothing, and he's like, just change into something that they'll like. We'll deal with it later. And Gwendolyn is like, you can borrow one of my dresses. And I'm like, you two are not the same size. Because the maid comes in with a full-on fuck-off dress for Ace to wear. And I don't think that was Gwendolyn's. Like, I don't know where it came from. Or maybe it came out that maybe the doctor went and got it out of the TARDIS.
Maybe. I don't know. I think there's an additional deleted scene that explains more about the dress. I vaguely remember there being some stuff cut out there. But she's got a dress. You look confused.
I'm really hung up on the whole guest thing.
Like, that's the thing that confuses you?
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're kind of, like, fighting the guy whose house they're staying at. Kind of.
But they saved him from the husks and control, if you look at it that way.
See, this is why I feel like the Queen murder plot was shoehorned in. Because otherwise, Josiah hasn't done a ton of terrible shit. Like, he took over this house, but that feels like something that the doctor would just kind of forgive and forget. Especially if the owner of the house was still alive, just in storage. You know, the doctor swoops in and sets everything right, and it's all fine or whatever.
Okay.
We're never gonna get through this episode.
No, it's fine.
Are so confused about
the inner workings of this building.
They're all friends at this point. They're friends.
I don't let people stay at my house and feed them breakfast unless we're friends.
They have a really big house, though.
Anyway. I do want to say I really like when Ace wakes up to this big breakfast. She's like, Cholesterol City. And then the maid goes, no, Perivale Village. That's a good solid gag. But also the doctor has not slept. He actually stayed up and woke up that inspector who's in the drawer.
Oh.
And the inspector
because
comes.
Because that's what we need at this point in the story.
Is a new character?
This asshole.
He comes in, he's just eating a sandwich, and is hella racist about Nimrod.
Mm-hmm.
Just talking about foreigners and
the way that the dialogue is structured, it's obviously meant to be.
This guy
is embarrassing.
Yeah, this guy is embarrassing because the dialogue is structured immediately prior to that to say, like, Victorian gentlemen are the pinnacle of evolution, and then this asshole comes in. But that doesn't make him any more pleasant.
No. And it doesn't help that the doctor's like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
He never questions it. He just kind of goes along with his racist ranting.
The attitude that the doctor takes seems to be like, this isn't worth the effort.
He woke his ass up. This is the doctor's fault. Yeah, he does nothing.
I don't know why the doctor was late. But again, actually I do. It goes back to what I said before. The doctor is just chilling on this adventure. And he's like, I am going to fuck up so much shit. I am just going to be chaos. I am just going to be chaos incarnate. And, oh, there's a racist asshole in a drawer? Let's bring him out.
I mean, to be fair, fair. He didn't know he was racist until after he woke up.
Yeah, I assume he was there's a cop here that might come in handy. Or an inspector.
And then immediately is like, oh, I was wrong.
Could I put him back in the drawer?
But then Ace comes down in the dress, and Nimrod, they were trying to wake up Nimrod, and he wasn't waking up. And then he finally wakes up and tells them all about how he first saw the light and how basically he worshipped it. And then the doctor figures that the light is the thing in the cellar.
And I have to wonder if this overly verbose caveman is a reference to an unearthly child. Maybe he was part of that tribe.
Was it the tribe of gum or something like that?
Shakespearean caveman.
I buy it.
Because he waxes poetic about
this
everything.
Is the guy that the doctor did not hit with a rock. he's back. Also, the moths come back to life. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that is what light is. Is light is sort of like, he kind of inspires change in a way, which is interesting because he hates it.
Because he hates it.
Yeah. So like, they gives Josiah the ability to evolve, and these guys worship him, and this makes this one guy go crazy. So his presence affects change, and he hates change. Let there be light, and then
the doctor says as much, where it's like, you know, you hate change. This is episode 3, but you hate change, but you even being here is change.
So Nimrod goes to free Redvers from his straitjacket, but he reveals that he's already been freed by the doctor.
Which is a hilarious scene to me. He's like, all right, let's get you out of that straitjacket. I already did it! And that was it. Like, he just stood there with his arms wrapped around himself for the entire scene talking. And then he's like, oh yeah, I did that.
There is a deleted line that kind of kills that. Because that is, I think that's great. That's just a wonderfully bonkers thing. But like, they take it a step too far, and I'm glad they cut this line. But he's like, I wear it through the night to like keep warm from the cold. And it's like, no, it's just more fun if he's
don't hang a lantern on it. Just let it be a stupid thing.
That's a cut that's worth it. And then Control lets light out in the cellar, just full on lets him out. And the doctor, I think at one point, like sort of stage whispers at her to like bring something else up at some point. Cause he's like, I'm glad you're coming up, but you should bring something else up too. And that's when she like lets light out.
I also want to point out that the racist policeman, I forget his name, I don't care.
Inspector something.
Yeah, the cream of Scotland Yard. He is an idiot on top of everything else. Like, he's a completely ineffectual idiot. And as he's being racist toward Nimrod, and Nimrod's talking about mammoths, he's like, oh yeah, tricky things, mammoths.
I laughed so hard at that line. So hard. What do you know about mammoths?
My next note, I don't even remember what this means, but it just says, the doctor encourages a cockroach to evolve, I think.
He's talking to the bug.
Yeah.
He's got it crawling on him, and it's a real, all those
bugs
come back to life, and so there's real bugs on set, and it's crawling all over his hands.
And he's giving a little pep talk. He's like, if you just believe in yourself, you can evolve and create a society.
And here we are today.
Yeah.
And then back in the room with the TARDIS is Ace and the Inspector find another Josiah husk. But this one is the guy that we've seen this entire time. He's underneath a sheet. And they also find Pritchard and Gwendolyn under a sheet. Why are they under a sheet? Who put them under the sheet? Oh, it must be the new Josiah.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
He just put everybody to sleep and just started putting sheets over
it's
everything.
Like, this is going
to
be great. When they come in, they're going to pull the sheets off, and then we can scare them. This episode is called Ghost Light. So we're all going to be dressed as ghosts.
The final thing they find is the glass display case that is labeled Homo Victorianus Ineptus. Mm-hmm. And they pull it up, and it's the Reverend, just full on like monkey with a banana in a glass display. And then the doctor's like, this is taking too long. Opens the like clock, like the big, and just turns the thing till it's 6 o'clock. And then it starts going off, and the doors slide open, and the maids come out. He, like, moves it forward by, like, a half hour, because he's like, we need to speed this up. We only got one episode left. Yeah. Come on, you guys. And Nimrod is just like, oh, wow, you are truly powerful.
You are some sort of lord of time.
That's some, like, meta, like, Bugs Bunny bullshit.
I mean, the Seventh Doctor is basically Bugs Bunny.
He is, isn't he?
Yeah. He is just a trickster god who is occasionally benevolent.
Then Ace is grabbed by Pritchard, and the inspector is grabbed by the Josiah husk. And then a brand new Josiah steps out from behind the TARDIS.
Who's dyed his hair and gotten rid of his little tiny glasses.
He ain't got, like, fucked up skin anymore. And also, like, Ace is like, it's not actually 6 o'clock, haha, and pulls up the shade. And then he's like, light doesn't bother me anymore. I've evolved past that. Everybody sort of makes their way to the, you know, main lobby or whatever. And Control exits the lift in her gauze, and because she's made an agreement with the doctor. And then Josiah tries to stop whatever is coming out next. And he runs up to the door, and it electrocutes him. And he falls down, and then the door bursts open, and light pours out. And that
and
is...
Liberace steps out.
He doesn't step out until episode 3. Right. Hold your horses. Then that is the end of episode 2. And we are now into episode 3.
Which I have called Let There Be Light.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, right? I thought so.
That's good.
Did
I've called it Primordial Soup.
I've called it Luck Be a Ladylike.
Oh, nice.
I like it.
Yes, then Liberace comes out.
Then Liberace steps out.
That's a pretty cool effect. Like, he glows and shit. Yep. And he's somewhat see-through. He's a ghost.
And he talks like this. It's a very gentle thing.
Until he gets really scary.
It's an interesting performance.
Yes. There's a lot to unpack just in this one thing.
I don't know what the fuck this means. I'm going to have fun. And then the doctor gives him an explanation that is not clear enough. He basically says that he came to survey the Earth, that Josiah did the surveying, and the Control was the Control. And that's his basic... He says it so basically, but with not enough detail to understand what the fuck he's talking about. And then Josiah tries to get one of the maids to attack Light, and Light just straight up kills her. He does a thing, and she turns blue and falls down.
Do you know what I like about this scene? Somebody's like... Light comes out, and I forget who, but somebody's like, the fuck is that? And Ace is like, he's an angel, dummy! Yeah.
Yes. He was supposed to be more angelic originally, too. He's going to have, like, wings and stuff, and they're like, we can't do that.
There's nothing about this man that makes me go, that's an angel, dummy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not the first time she's looked at something that was very clearly something and then called it something. Like, in the battlefield, she's like, is it a robot? When it's clearly just a guy in armor, like a knight's armor. Oh, she's doing bad on her initiation test. So, basically, we learned that Light was trying to catalog Earth, but things kept evolving, and that really pissed him off.
I find this concept, like, as nuts and, like, sometimes hard to follow as this serial is, this core concept is really fucking funny.
It is.
I do understand the frustration of working a long time on something and then having upper management come in and be like, yeah, none of this works. You have to start back from scratch. And just being so fucking pissed about it that I want to destroy the world. So I get it. This is one of the more believable Doctor Who villain motivations.
I mean, we've talked about this on this podcast before.
But it was about laundry.
This is me and laundry, mm-hmm. where it's like, I just finished doing the laundry. What do you mean? There's new dirty clothes. Bullshit. Let's burn the whole place down.
I'm that way with dishes.
Mm. Laundry, dishes, yeah. Having to eat.
Mm-hmm. I just had food
three
yesterday.
Times a day. Bullshit.
You have to come up with like a different food to eat every night. Like you can't, it's like you can't eat the same thing every night. You have to come up with different ideas. And it's like, why? Why can't I just eat cereal for every meal?
Because then you get diverticulitis.
But, like, the
that
cats...
That did happen.
The cats do.
I give them slightly different food. Yeah. They got, like, a multi... There's, like, different varieties of whatever the fuck's
some
in those
cans. Some
of
them are tuna-flavored. Some of them are chicken-flavored. On Thanksgiving, I gave them turkey-flavored so that they were eating turkey like
with
the
us.
Rest of us.
Aw.
But see, that's even more mental stress that you're taking on yourself. And they don't give a shit.
That's true.
There are some that they clearly prefer over others.
Yeah.
Because there are times where it's like, wow, that food is gone. And there are other times where it's like, are you guys going to finish that? And we should be paying attention to what the flavors are.
I don't.
I don't. They come in a variety pack. They're going to get what they get.
So Control comes in and says that she was promised freeness from the doctor, which is not for the doctor to give her, I guess. And then she's like, well, fuck it. I got it anyway. And then she just runs away. And then meanwhile, we see that Josiah thinks that the light... God. I hate these fucking names. Josiah thinks that Light and the Doctor will keep each other busy while he does his big plan that we don't know what it is yet. And he also plans to send Ace to Java.
Control eats a bug.
That's my next note. Control eats a bug. Like, she saw the bug and Tony's like, oh no, she isn't. And then she did. Because she's talking about, like, how she's so, like, she'll be, like, refined now and an actual person. And she'll do the evolving and then she eats a bug.
She'll be a ladylike.
And then just Ace just has a fucking waking nightmare. I'm assuming this is just the stress of everything getting to her and not like an actual thing that happens?
Yeah, I think after Ace witnessed a racism, she went and she like stumbled into this old house to like run away and it was evil and she burned it down. I want to point out that this is when we find that out.
We found that out in the previous episode.
Well, like,
all of it though.
Yeah. Initially she only told the doctor that she went to the house.
And it was evil and she didn't like it. Yeah, this is when we find out that she burnt it down.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're right.
You know, clearly she's got some trauma associated with it. And it's a very effective scene. She acts her ass off. The camera work is great. The lighting is great. Like, when she starts having her breakdown, you see, like, blue lights come in that don't make any sense because they're, like, siren or, you know, police car sirens and stuff like that.
Yeah, because it starts off and it's, like, animal noises and stuff.
It's animal noises, because she's got all of the taxidermied animals around her. And their eyes glow, and I don't know if those are cameras or
just Ace being,
But, yeah, it's a very effective scene.
It's very good. And then Gwendolyn grabs her to take her to Java. Meanwhile, Control has teamed up with Redvers, and Redvers is going to help her become a ladylike. In that she's completely changed into like a new, like, just, she's in a big dress now too. Modern. I mean, Victorian, but modern for the time. And I guess Redvers helped her pick it out. The doctor comes in to join in and she freaks out and thinks that he's there to stop her or whatever. And he's like, hey, no, calm down. But then she just straight up jumps out the window.
Oh yeah. She fucks right off through a plate glass window.
The doctor at this point is like, fuck, there's so much to keep track of. I can't keep up this many games. Yeah. He literally says that.
He says, even I can't play this many games at once.
They're talking about like how she's becoming a lady, like, or a lady, proper lady. And then, like, Redvers is like, well, if she's a proper lady, she wouldn't have me in her boudoir.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny. But then this is finally when the queen plot is revealed somewhat. He's like, Josiah has me here because he wants me to hunt this crown sax something.
I forget what it is. It's that line of the royals changed their name to whatever the one it is that starts with a W. It was originally like a Germanic name, and it's that name. It's a crowned that name.
Mm.
I forget what it is, and I have the internet, but I'm lazy. But yeah, it's clearly Josiah has made Redfern believe. Redvers.
Yeah.
Where the Redverse grows.
Crown Saxe Coburg.
Yes. He's clearly made him believe that the queen is like a game to be killed.
And that's the first time we've seen it. And it was so like so weirdly worded and stuff that I just didn't. He shows a picture of the queen, but I wasn't like fully. I just, like, in my mind, this guy's bonkers anyway. So I'm like, I don't know what they're. He's just nuts. But yeah, this is the first part where it's like, oh, Josiah wants to kill the queen.
Just a flashback real quick. When Ace was kind of making her confession to the doctor did give her the TARDIS key and said, you know, you can go back to the TARDIS and wait. And she said, no, that's the easy way out. I'm not going to take that. And fair cop to her. Mm-hmm. Good job, Ace.
But she is currently grabbed by Gwendolyn and they have a bit of a fight, which everybody in the making of was very gross about. Everyone's like, oh, yes, we were on the set for the ladies fighting. Oh, just gross. Nimrod comes in on Light. We already saw that Light had killed a maid, but we didn't. He comes in and he turns around and he's just holding, like, her arm.
Well, the previous scene with Light, he said that he was waxing about how so many things had changed.
A light, you know, waxing.
Yeah, light waxing. He waned too, but that was later. But he was talking about so many things had changed, and a hapless maid, one of the wall maids, wanders by, and he's like, come to me, child. I require your services, or your aid, or whatever. And then that's the end of that scene. And yeah. Here, Nimrod walks in on him, Light turns around from a table, and he's just waving the arm of this maid with her body on the table. He's just waving the arm like Pennywise.
He's just like...
And he's like, I wanted to see how it works, so I dismantled it. And fuck!
That's terrifying. It's incredibly creepy.
Very upsetting.
Fucking hell. It's his delivery. It's the situation. It's everything about it was just... top notch.
And then he continues just rambling and stuff, and he's again just complaining about how things keep changing, and he's like, look at these microbes.
Look at this animation in my hand.
He does a little finger wiggle and these little dots appear. He's like, they're changing even as we speak. And then the inspector comes in like, I want out of this place. I want out of this plot. And he is. Well, he'll show up in a different form. Warm later, but he kills the inspector. And
he's invited to dinner.
Sent to Java.
I guess Revers is no longer helping Control become more ladylike, but Ace is. Mm-hmm. Is teaching her how to speak and stuff, I guess, more properly. And then Gwendolyn comes in and they fight again. But then the doctor stops Gwendolyn from fighting Ace by showing her a locket he got from somewhere. It probably happened somewhere. And inside that locket is a picture of her and Pritchard. And she realizes, I guess that breaks the hypnosis.
Yeah, that kind of breaks the spell. And Pritchard realizes that this girl is her daughter.
Well, she doesn't realize that yet. She hasn't been snapped out. Just Gwendolyn has it.
Yeah.
Gwendolyn knows that Pritchard is her mother. And is.
But it's actually when Ace is... Eliza Doolittling Control. It's a nice beat and a nice reversal from the beginning of the story, where the doctor was doing that with Ace and even referred to her as Eliza. She also gets the famous elocution quote wrong, because it's the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain, and she tells Control to say the rain in Spain goes mainly down the drain.
Oh, nice! I didn't catch that. So yeah, the next scene is everyone just goes to dinner. They just have a nice old meal. The doctor warns Ace not to eat the soup.
Multiple times.
Yes.
He's like, don't eat the soup.
I don't understand the amount of urgency of anything that's happening, or the amount of fighting or animosity that people have for each other when it always gets interrupted at dinner time so everyone can eat. It's like being at my extended family's house. It's very hard to keep track of.
It's a comedy of manners, you know? But Josiah's like, oh, I'm not going to sit down and eat if Control is there. I'm very upset about this, but they talk him into sitting down.
She just comes to dinner.
Yeah.
She's running and trying to get her freedom and running away.
Then she's all like, I'm a lady now.
But they all like, just
I'm
come.
Sorry, I'm a lady now.
They all just come and have dinner.
Yeah, but they do bicker and fight. And the doctor says, who was it said Earthmen never invite their ancestors around to dinner?
We know that one.
Tony and I both were it's Hitchhiker's Guide. It's like watching Doctor Who, like we've been watching it. We've been watching it all at once. So it's weird that like, you forget that time passes so dramatically.
Yeah.
So like, we were recently watching the era when Douglas Adams was writing Doctor Who, and now we're in the era where they're referencing his other works, you know, that happened after he was on Doctor Who. It's so wild.
Time's weird. Time's messed up.
I was alive when this episode came out, so that's crazy.
That is crazy.
But yeah, also at the dinner is when he snaps. That's when he snaps Pritchard out, and she runs off.
Ah, yes.
And then Pritchard and Gwendolyn trauma bond, talk about like how her dad and her husband went to Java.
I think she killed him.
Did she?
They say.
Oh, she probably.
You sent him there.
Josiah probably made her do it.
Yeah, but the doctor mentions when he breaks Gwendolyn out of her hypnosis or mind control, whatever.
That she enjoys doing it.
Yeah, she says, you know, oh, how could I ever do that? Yeah. And the doctor says, you know, I could forgive you doing this, but not the joy you took in it. So, I mean, clearly Gwendolyn is fucked up.
And then light appears in the room with them and turns them to stone.
Is this before or after he eats the racist soup?
This is before. Okay. Because light's gone to go do some shit. He, yeah. like, left.
Well, well he moves at the speed of thought.
Yeah.
So
fucking
he
hell.
Can just...
Still makes me so upset.
He can just flick her around wherever he wants.
Because he's about to show up at the dinner.
Okay.
Because he's just shown back up. I think it's like he left to go like check on the world to see what the fuck's going on with the world now before coming back. But like back at the dinner, this is when we find out Revers has that invite with a plus one. He was going to give it to Josiah, but now he's going to give it to Control.
Because he's got a little crush on her.
And then like this makes Josiah angry. And she's like, well, if I can't go, no one can. And she's going to burn the invite, which Ace tries to stop her because she's like, I burned down a thing one time and it was bad. This is when she reveals it, that she burned down the house.
Oh, I think you're right.
Oh, yeah.
We only had the nightmare before.
Yeah. The breakdown scene was just, like, it was hinting at it.
Right.
But yeah, this is when she came out and said, yeah, I burned it down. And even the doctor seems surprised by this. Because she's like, you're not my patrol or probation officer.
Yeah, because like it was a direct reply to Control burning the invitation.
Which I get you, Ace. But also I feel like these are two wildly different scenarios. And you may not need to liberally apply your trauma to her burning an envelope.
But yeah, it is true. You can't just burn all of your problems.
Right.
Is it? Is that true?
Yeah, that's pretty true. So then we'll like, huh? Did you say we'll see? Do not burn down the kitchen. It's literally in our theme song.
But to be fair, it's Daleks saying that. And you generally don't want to do what
they're
Daleks
bad
say.
Guys.
Huh. I'll have to think about this. So, Light arrives at the dinner, and that is when he reveals that the cream of Scotland Yard is the primordial soup. Which, when he told Ace not to eat the soup, I made a joke. I was like, it's primordial soup. And then they literally fucking say it at this point.
Yeah, the racist inspector has been rendered into his components.
Yeah, that is literally the soup that made man. It's primordial soup.
And Light's like, Which, does Light have a physical body?
I don't understand anything about how Light works.
He does. I mean, he
don't
has to.
Take that out of context.
He picked up an arm, so he can touch
things. Oh, that's
true.
He straight up murdered that wall maid. So
he can interact with things, for sure.
Yeah.
And the inspector had been eating like, that was his thing. He was eating in, like, every scene.
That's true.
So he was, like, you know, fattening himself up for Light. Yeah.
He probably wasn't gamey.
This is when he's like, hey, I've been just sort of mulling over this whole situation, trying to figure out what to do. Everything keeps evolving, and the only way to stop that is I'm just going to destroy the world so I can properly catalog it and be done with this fucking place.
I'm just going to etch-a-sketch this bitch.
Again, like, just throw all the laundry into the dumpster. We're done. We're done having clothes.
He's like, I've already cataloged everything, so now I can destroy the planet. And the doctor's like, well, you've missed some things. And he's like, what? And then the doctor just starts listing fictional creatures. He definitely mentioned some, like, Lewis Carroll stuff.
Yeah, the Bandersnatch and Slithy Toves and...
Did he say Jabberwocky? I don't know if he said it.
I believe he did. I think that's what started him down the Lewis Carroll.
He ends it with the Crown Sax Coburn.
Yeah.
But that fucks up Light, and, like, he gets mad, and he starts dimming. His light literally starts dimming.
Which is a pretty cool effect.
And
I enjoyed it.
I think he's, like, says something, like, about, like, how much the doctor enjoys just fucking shit up. And the doctor's like, yeah.
That's kind of my thing.
You're right.
So, basically, Light has been defeated.
Well, okay, so, at this point in the dinner...
Right, because they're all eating dinner.
We're so close to being done. You gotta move past this.
Okay. I want to break your brain even further. Who cooked the dinner?
The wall maids.
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah.
Sure.
Why not? Why wouldn't it be the wall? There are maids living in the wall.
But they didn't make Ace's food.
That was the day staff.
Because it was breakfast.
The breakfast
at
was made by the day staff.
Okay.
The dinner could have been
wall staff.
By the wall, yeah.
But it's not actually after 6.
Well, yeah, but they've been woken up early by the chimes of the clock.
So they might as well make soup.
Now that was Light's job. But now the night staff and the day staff have met each other, I guess.
Because they haven't left yet.
Yeah.
Sure.
Anyway, what was my point?
I don't know!
Oh, yes. Okay, so here at the tail end of the dinner, when Light comes back and he's like, fuck it all, I'm just gonna...
Relatable feel.
Yeah, I'm just gonna burn the shit down. And Ace is like, don't burn things.
Oh, I didn't even read... Yeah, that's... Okay. That's definitely part of it. Everybody is just... Their solution is to just completely destroy things.
Yeah. Ace did that one time, and then she was like, no, I'm not running away from my problems or burning them ever again. Well, I guess I will burn them, because I will just... I will create new explosives that will blow shit up.
It's not... Yeah, but it's more about... Less about burning things down is expanding them she does violently.
Like, yeah. I mean, when she was younger and less mature, she burned things down. Now she burns things up. But when he comes back and says, you know, all right, this is it. I'm done with the world. The doctor, at that point, you can see it click, and he starts playing Light like a fiddle. He starts going off about exactly what you said about how that's impossible. Change happens all the time. You know, you changed your mind. You changed, you know, where you're standing. And the doctor, this is maybe my favorite little bit of the episode, wanders, while he's talking to Light, wanders out of the dining hall into the foyer. As he's talking to Light, he points and snaps, and Light appears in front of him because he's playing Light so hard, he knows exactly where Light is going to be when he finishes that sentence.
I didn't notice that, but that...
It is fantastic. He's like, you know, you're changing this. You're changing... This is when he goes off on the... And starts listing off the fictional animals. He's like, you know, the thing, and the horned... Who's it? And, you know, none of this changes.
Yeah, that's and very good.
Light appears. And Light is just playing into his hands entirely. This is the Seventh Doctor at his most, as of yet, manipulative, and I love it.
He's the most Seventh Doctor he's been so far.
Yes.
But we find out that the episode's not over yet. they've defeated Light, but he activated the Firestorm, the thing that's going to destroy the planet. He's already activated it before dinner. So they got to go stop that. And they do that by redirecting the energy into taking off, because this is a spaceship. So that basically the energy that was going to be used to destroy the world is instead going to be used to propel this ship, which is powered by thought.
They just go wherever they think. And the doctor's like, you know, I hope they don't get distracted.
The crew of this ship is Josiah, but he's now the control. He's basically he's become control, and control has evolved. She has his job now. They're gonna go out and do the survey, except instead of Light, it's gonna be Redvers, and control will be Josiah, and Josiah is control. They've all evolved into new roles.
The family and the maids and the day staff. Were they in the spaceship?
No, they're in the
manor. They're in the house. They probably just leave over the spaceship.
They probably just all leave and go home.
Okay.
Also, there's a bit when like Josiah is trying to stop them from taking off in the ship. Control puts him in a collar and like has him on a leash. But when he's trying to stop them, they get into a fight, and one of his husk heads just explodes in the background.
Yes, and that the husk head explodes. And Josiah is defeated. And I don't know how those two things relate.
Yeah.
Or what caused the husk head to explode.
Who knows?
It just happened. Anyway, Josiah's defeated.
Josiah's defeated. They take off. Then Light disperses into the house.
Yeah.
Basically just explodes and just infuses the house with his evilness, which is what Ace picked up on in her past, the future. And then the doctor explains all this, and he's like, would you have changed anything knowing what you know now? And she's like, yeah, I would have blown it up instead of burning it down. And then the doctor says, and a line that was improvised.
She's very, so
because the original line was, he was supposed to say, that's my girl. And he instead changed it to wicked, which is beautiful. Perfect. Mwah.
Yeah, when
chef's kiss,
or when they're talking about, yeah, so apparently I guess Light short-circuited himself. And I don't even know how literal to take that as a metaphor, but he I guess kind of went into the house sort of, and that's what Ace was reacting to. The doctor says, just the ghost of an evil memory lingering, a dark secret after the candle is out. Which is a really good line, but also it goes back to the idea of, I saw someone differentiate hauntings versus ghosts. That a ghost, as we think of it, is an apparition. A haunting is a sort of emotional recording that just plays over and over and over again. So the house is haunted.
By light.
By the character of light, not the concept of light, I think. Maybe.
It's all wibbly wobbly.
Yeah. I'm mad that there's not a real fucking ghost. There's exactly zero ghosts in this.
Well, hold on though. Here's the thing.
No!
No. Here's the thing. This is called Ghost Light, right?
Yes.
At the end of the episode, Light dies and his spirit infuses the house. So it is the ghost of Light.
It's not a full ghost. It's a ghost light.
It's like a Stone Tape Nigel Neal recording.
You know when you're wanting a ghost, but it's like, that's too many calories.
They just changed the formula for Ghost Zero, and I'm not as big a fan.
Diet Ghost. Anyway, that's the end of the episode.
I don't know really where we move on from there, except to a commercial break.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for final thoughts.
Modern Musicology is a podcast covering topics on rock and pop, ranging mostly from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, with occasional excursions into the 60s and aughts, and even occasionally the 2010s. Anything is fair game. Classic rock, R&B, folk, punk, prog, rap, metal, and way more, with two Americans, one Brit, a ton of fun, and a healthy dose of cynicism.
Hey, Joe.
What?
Do you know what time it is?
Oh, are we back?
We're back. Do you know what time it is?
6:10 p.m. March 20th, 2022.
Very good.
And also, I mean, I'm all confused about what time it is now. Like, is daylight saving? What's up with daylight savings
what
time?
What is up with daylight savings time?
I don't understand. Is it gone? Is it, what's...
Not yet.
It's not gone.
Not yet.
Okay.
It passed in, I forget which...
It passed in the Senate.
The Senate. Oh, okay. But not the House.
So what you could say is that the ghost of light is still haunting our time, and it won't dissipate until 2023. So we have to have dinner served before then.
Did that answer your question?
No.
What was your question?
Do you know what time it is?
My title for this episode...
I see now how this feels, and it's not great.
My title for this segment is Final Thoughts.
Final Thoughts.
This is a serial of the television show Doctor Who. It has characters in it. A story happens in it. There are no fucking ghosts, and I'll fight anyone about that. There's no ghosts in it. There is a character named Light. Here's what's good about this serial. The Doctor and Ace have just magnificent scenes, magnificent chemistry. They are awesome, and I could watch them play these characters forever. I'm done.
Is that it? That's all you got?
Control's very cool.
The concept of control, or control the character?
Control the character. I like what the actor is doing.
To further understand Tony's thoughts, you need to watch the deleted scene of them responding to this question. You also need to read their novelization of their final thoughts.
And then the interviews.
And then the interviews that they do after.
Afterwards.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Read the novelization. It makes more sense. It makes more sense if you read the novelization.
You get more into the mind of Tony than you can in just like a podcast. You like, instead of just dialogue, you get like internal monologue.
I like a lot of the ideas. I really like the exploration of evolution and the idea of hating change. I think that core concept is really funny of cataloging and being like, oh, fuck, I just finished and they all evolved again. Those bastards. That's hilarious. There's a lot of interesting ideas. A lot of people were excited for us to get to Ghost Light because we have a a long history of liking bonkers episodes.
Yeah.
And then as we were watching this, we were like, we're going to disappoint some people because...
because I had such a strong hold on Warrior's Gate that I did not have on this
one. Yeah. And I feel like there's like a scale from like, from Warrior's Gate to Time Flight. How enjoyable is your bonkers episode of Doctor Who? And this is...
squarely in between those two.
100%! That's the middle of the scale, is Ghost Light. And yeah. Those are my final thoughts.
I enjoyed that, yes.
I like that Time Flight is the nadir on that scale.
Uh-huh. Mm.
Like, that is the other extreme of Warrior's Gate. That's odd to me, but okay.
It makes sense, because it's like a bonkers episode that's hard to follow.
Yeah.
But, like, Time Flight sucks.
But bad at everything.
Yes. And Warrior's Gate does everything beautifully.
You could also make an argument for, what's the episode that Baby Patton is in?
Time Monster?
Time Monster. Because
that's not very confusing, though. It's just bonkers.
It's just bonkers.
Mind Robber, maybe. Anyway.
I love this episode. It is naughty. It is somewhat difficult.
Wait, naughty? Like K-N-O-T-T-Y?
K-N-O-T-T-Y.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like, it's been a bad, bad episode. Yes,
it showed its clavicles. I think it's a fascinating episode. I think there is such thematic depth to it that may be intended, or it may just be read into it by somebody with a creative mind. Who the hell knows? That's how all the best things are. But, like, you can also read Light as being almost a Luciferian figure, if for no other reason than he's the light bringer. And you've got the reverend talking shit on evolution. There's probably a more poetic way to say that, but my caffeine's fading. There's a lot to chew on. It is, I think, completely thought out and makes perfect sense, but not to us, not to the audience. I think there are crucial elements that either are missing from the episode, that were intended but are missing in the final cut of the episode, or were intended to be included and for whatever reason, time constraints, whatever, they didn't get there. Taken as a whole, taken as a Ghost Light experience, I love it. You do have to do research after the fact, and I'm not generally a fan of stories like that. I'm not generally a fan of stories that make you do homework, but it's, I think, a fascinating story. I think it's easily one of my favorite Doctor Companion stories. I love Seven, I love Ace, and this is just a fantastic showcase for both of them. I love the atmosphere of this. I love the house. As a dyed-in-the-wool horror fan, I am annoyed whenever Doctor Who does a horror story, and then it turns out it was an alien. But that's all the time. There's never been a time when it wasn't the case. Even flashing forward to the new series and, like, Hyde, which is a great ghost story. It's got a great creepy haunted house, and it was like a monster in heat. But I don't feel like this one whiffs the ending the way that, say, Horror Fang Rock did, where it's like, it was this incredibly atmospheric story, very scary, very eerie, and it was just a glowy space jellyfish at the end. And, like, also, that's somehow the thing that Santarans are most afraid of.
Rutons!
Yeah. So, it's definitely got a lot left unsaid, and not in a just fill in the blanks yourself way, but in a, no, there were actual things, there was actual text that needed to still be in there. But I do love it. I think it's a great addition to what is, I think, the best season of classic Doctor Who, when they came in and reinvented the show for season 25 and especially season 26. They clearly knew this is what we want to do with the show, and it is readily apparent, and I'm so sad that it stopped at 26. But they are firing on all cylinders right now. Personally, I think it only even gets better with the next story, Curse of Fenric.
We might have to have you back for that one.
Yeah. I may have to overshoot your house again.
I have mixed feelings about this one. I love a lot of what it's doing. I love the Doctor and Ace especially. Their relationship is so good. It's interesting, the Doctor being kind of manipulative, but also doing it as a way to sort of teach Ace stuff. Like, we've had, like, the Doctor teaching his companion stuff before, but I feel like never this specific. Like,
this intentional?
This intentional, yeah.
This is enforced therapy.
Yes.
But that does make sense if their goal was for him to, like, kind of harden her up some to go to Gallifrey mm-hmm. and be a Time Lady.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that is something that this era is specifically doing, is sort of telling a long game story that they've never really done before. And they probably didn't get to, I don't know how much, you know, they got to finish what they were wanting to do or get to the stuff that they were setting up that they never got to do. But because I have heard of a certain master plan. I do enjoy a lot of this. I kind of enjoy the pieces more than the whole. Like, I feel like there's just, like, they needed some sort of second pass. I don't know if it's to either remove some plot lines or clear things up or make things more surreal and slightly confusing. I don't know. I feel like there's just something, one thing that would make it perfect. I don't know what it is. But, like, it's either too confusing or not confusing enough. Like, if it was more impressionistic, because it feels like part of it is like, I feel like I'm missing a piece of information. It's not like I'm not supposed to know. Yeah. It feels like the show thinks you do know.
Where sometimes there are things that it's like, that's just not important. Like, we've all agreed that, like, the specifics aren't important and we're going with the vibe. And it doesn't feel like that a lot of the times. It more feels like, yeah, you are supposed to know what's going on and you just don't.
The biggest problem is you don't know what Ghost, Light, and... Not Ghost. You don't know what Light, Control, and Josiah are up to. And, like, that could lead you to feel like it's sort of an alien. You're just barging in on these aliens, and it's like, what's going on? But, like, no one has that reaction to it. They all just sort of accept it. So, like, either having, like, them be like, what's going on, and things being weird and confusing would be one thing. But it's kind of like, everybody's just going along with it and then just doing whatever.
And then eating dinner.
So, like, either make it more confusing or just explain better what they're doing so I can understand what, like, their motivation is. Because sometimes it just feels like some things are happening and I'm like, I don't know why these things are happening. But, like, clear it up or make it more confusing. And then that's what would make this perfect. But that being said, I did enjoy a lot of it. I did enjoy the, like, evolution metaphors, and the dialogue is, like, great, the whole serial. It's funny, it's scary, it's weird. Even, like, the stuff that is bad is better than, like, some of the stuff we've gotten in the past. Like, like, it feels more competent than the Sixth Doctor era, for example.
I will say, if this, like, this exact same episode was in the Sixth Doctor era, I would hate it.
Yeah, because it would have been handled less competently?
Yes.
Well, it also would have been Six and Mel, and that would have not been a pleasant experience.
That would have been so uncomfortable.
But I liked it. I thought it was good. I was kind of hoping it would blow me away, because, like, everyone was talking about Warrior's Gate, and I love Warrior's Gate a lot, and I enjoyed it. And then everyone was like, if you like that, wait till you get to Ghost Light. And then I got to Ghost Light, and maybe I had amped it up too much in my head. And I do really enjoy it, but I, like, part of me wonders, is it clever and I'm not picking up on it, or is it just bad execution?
I think the difference between Warrior's Gate, which is the last episode that I was on, as a matter of fact.
Oh, you were in some since then, I think.
Oh, yeah. The Awakening with the Goopy Boy. But I think the difference is Warrior's Gate is a harder story. And by that, I mean it follows our human rules. This one works. In rewatching it today, it struck me how much it feels like a theatrical experience. It feels like a play. Mm-hmm. It works on that kind of heightened logic and performance and motivation that you don't necessarily get in a theatrical experience. It's certainly less linear. I mean, clearly, this was just written as a loose framework to throw a bunch of ideas that the writer wanted to suss out.
I mean, you can tell that when the plot doesn't really start till the last episode.
Yeah. And I mean,
and, like, multiple plots.
I think you could cut the whole kill the queen thing with no detriment to the, you know, and use that time to explain some more stuff.
You could probably do that and cut the inspector entirely.
That's true.
There's just, like, there is a lot of characters.
There are. for a single house, for a single location.
The three-parter.
Yeah. And this is actually the end of classic Doctor Who.
Yeah, they filmed this last.
This is the very last episode that they filmed.
So the Doctor saying Wicked, I think, was the last thing he filmed. I don't think it was the last thing filmed for the episode, but it was the last thing that, like, Sylvester McCoy and Ace filmed. But that was Ghostlight. We did it.
Ghostlight.
Ghostlight. But before we go, Matt, is there anything you'd like to plug?
I don't know. Follow me on Twitter, because I'm cool.
What's your Twitter handle?
You don't even know your Twitter handle.
Oh, it's at E.M. Golden.
Okay.
Which is pronounced M. Golden.
Yeah.
But it's also like electronic Matt Golden. Golden.
Okay.
And I'm having to make the best of using my middle name as my actual given name.
You can follow me on Twitter too. I have a TikTok now.
Mm-hmm.
I have two whole TikToks.
I'm in both of them.
It's going great. I'm forward power on both. That's FW...
Oh, you were so confident.
FWDPWR.
Mm-hmm.
Forward power. I'm that most places on the internet. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, TikTok, or Instagram, I have that same handle everywhere.
Hey, at Mini Pineapple. No stumbling, stuttering, or having to think about it.
How do you spell that?
MintyPineapple.
Show off.
Can we do it backwards?
Also, if you are in or around the Chattanooga area, I'm on the Chattanooga Roller Derby team now. And so we've been doing a handful of events. Joe and I went to an axe throwing thing at...
Yeah, Valkyrie Axe.
But we'll probably be doing more events like that. I'll probably be out at places.
Harass Tony. In public. Is that what you're saying?
Please don't. But... I don't know if I'll be actually, like, skating once bout time starts. I don't know if I'm rostered, but I am an active skater.
And Fingers crossed.
And we'll be at a bunch of events and stuff. And we will also be at an event together.
Oh, shit. Yeah. We're going to Dragon Con.
We will be at Dragon Con this year.
Whenever that is. I don't even know.
Labor Day. It's Labor Day weekend.
Oh, we need to get a hotel or something.
We need to get a hotel now.
Yeah.
We haven't done it yet. And there might not be any left.
That's probably true.
So, yeah. Come see us at Dragon Con.
We're going to be there for ESO.
For ESO working. So.
But we'll be there.
We'll be around.
I've got nothing to plug, but Mini Pineapple everywhere. But if you like this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on WatchYourAssalon.com. You can also find our podcast, our Patreon, our Amazon wish list, and more at Linktree/Watchathon. That's L-I-N-K. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
God.
Hoisted by your own petard.
That's LINKTR.EE/Watchathon.
You want to spell that backward?
NOHTAHCTAW/EE.RTKNIL. It was easy because it was.
You were reading that.
I can do the alphabet backwards.
Yeah, but that's memorization.
Well, okay. And I want to say, I guess, special thanks to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You're welcome.
You can check him out at whatever Twitter handle he said earlier. And mattgolden.xyz. And I also want to say a special thanks to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our amazing theme song.
Thank you, Vince.
Check out more of their music at vincentel.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about The Curse of Fenric with, who is this? Matt Golden.
That asshole?
Two in a row?
Shit.
You greedy, greedy, greedy guest.
Yes.
And also, Nicole Mazza will be there.
That's a good lineup.
But until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Oh.
Oh.
Slight change in your sign off.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Oh,
That was nonverbal. Just say bye, Matt.
Bye, Matt.
Never mind, I'll have him completely bewildered by the time I'm finished.
I'll help.
I wanted to see how it works, so I dismantled it.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.